It's time to fire it up.
Why you gotta make me feel inferior? Because I'm on the grill, B.
From the chop.
Food for action.
To the gear.
It's 122,000 BTUs of char broiling power.
To the drinks.
Drink some beers.
These guys have you covered.
We're just kicking back out here. Just having a barbecue.
This is the Grilling Guys.
Good morning and welcome to the Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Hey, we're coming to you live from Jethro FM, Country with a Twist. Conrad, always good to have you controlling the big board and making me sound good. Barbecue Bob is up in a tree somewhere. So I have my old standby, the Baritone of Beer. You all know him, Chaz Thompson. Chaz, thanks for sitting in, brother.
No worries, man. I'm getting ready for deer camp myself.
Yep, and Bob is just taking a little time to sit in a tree and contemplate life, I think, because he sent me a video this week of him passing up a 6-point that walked underneath him, very much in shooter's range and in a nice clear opening, but I think he's hunting for bigger horns,
hey,
or
like
some doe meat.
I mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. I got a world-class 10 on the wall.
Right.
Unless I can outdo that.
Right.
Does. Let's go does and let those things grow another year.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, for you guys that need one to put on the wall, hey, great.
Yeah.
But I like the 10 and ups. Otherwise, hit a doe. It's just meat in the freezer. And
right. It's a little better meat anyway.
A little tenderer.
Yeah, and you don't have all that hormone rushing through them for the mating season like you do on the bucks, so that stuff can get a little strong if it's the right time or the wrong time of year, I guess it may be. But anyway, yeah, venison is venison. The more tender, the better, right?
Meat in the freezer and being able to harvest your own, that's just a awesome thing we get to do here in Michigan. And our deer are good size.
Right. Yeah, you go south. I have a brother that lives in Texas, and he's out in the hill country, and the deer are like chickadees out there. I mean, they're everywhere. Not too many hunt him where he is. He's in kind of in a resort community. But they're maybe a buck and a quarter, the big bucks.
Do they have a bag limit on them like we do rabbits?
Yeah, exactly.
My buddy Reese down in Florida says they're the size of German shepherds in Florida.
Yeah,
so
they're small. So we have these big corn-fed ones up here. You get a little bit west of here. You get out in Iowa and South Dakota, they're even bigger. But they're corn-fed out there, you know, an unlimited supply of food year-round pretty much. So it's weird how by region they're different.
I might
size.
Sneak out there to Iowa and get one of those.
Oh man, I've never shot one there, but I've been bird hunting and seen hundreds of them, and they're half again as big as ours. And I mean, I think hanging 300 is not, I mean, that's a big deer, but it's not like a record by any means. These are big deer. Saw one jump a barbed wire fence and took the first two strands of barbed wire as a 5-strand. First two strands on his chest just sent him spinning in the air, never even slowed him down. He was chasing a doe, and we kind of jumped him out of a brush pile, right? We were walking by, and it was like, holy cow, man. It didn't even, I mean, he just blew through a barbed wire fence.
Those things, when they're chasing a doe, man, they're like bulldozers.
Right.
They go through it. The one that hit my truck.
Yeah, exactly.
There you have it.
That blow up a truck in a hurry. So anyway, hey, we've got a little celebrating to do later today. All of us here in the studio, Chaz and I and Conrad, have a very good friend, that Polish Grill Catering, Laura Szczepanik, is turning 60. And
aww.
Yeah, so I want to celebrate her birthday. She is a great friend of the show and another professional in the catering business that has a very, very unique menu that just plays very well with everybody that's ever eaten it. And so we're treating her a little bit this weekend, and we're going to help her out with her birthday party. I'm going to bring over a few pans of pulled pork and some corn muffins.
Happy birthday, Laura. Yeah.
She decided she didn't want to be surprised like you.
Yeah, right.
So she passed out all of us an invitation.
Anybody that hands out shots for Halloween, you got to love her.
Right, yeah. And puts her address on Facebook so you can find her, right? I mean, that's awesome. That's awesome. But anyway, Laura, if you're listening, happy birthday from the Grilling Guys and all the rest. And
well, she's got to do her show today, too.
Right.
Polka Pops.
Right. So we'll be, later on today, we'll be celebrating her birthday with her. So it's cool. We're going to have a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. But, Chaz, this is the time of year that I value a sharp knife, right? And you and I have talked knives before, but I had it's something I bought on the online, but it was called Wasabi and not the spice, but it's a knife sharpener, and it clamps to the bench. It's got a little rod that comes down on a diagonal. You put the stone on that rod, and then there's a clamp for the knife that rotates 180 degrees. I'm not saying it's the best knife sharpener I've ever had, but it's well-engineered.
I'll tell you, the one thing about sharpening a knife that a lot of people miss, it's all about the angle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the repetitions, you can stroke that thing 100 million times, but if you're at the wrong angle or you vary your angle,
right,
it's not going to do it.
And that's why this little machine that I bought, I mean, I don't know, it was like $49.95. It came with four different stones from soft to hard. You know, if you're taking a big nick out of a blade, you need a softer one. If you're if you're taking a big nick out of the blade, you need the hard one, right, to move the metal. And then the soft ones are the ones that puts that shaving edge on your knife.
Oh, yeah, and if you want to go the step further, you can even go to a strop.
Right.
Like the old barbers.
Yep.
I have one at home that on my really nice knives that I use in the kitchen.
Right.
When I'm doing something a little fancier, we put the strop to them.
Right.
But for my deer blade, yeah, I'm going to use something a little harder to get after it and stuff because I want a real stiff, hard blade.
Right. And you want something that's not going to slip out of your hand. It's not a little fillet knife. It's a big, you know, boning knife, if you will, or a hunting knife, right?
Yeah, in the field, it's a hunting knife. Then once it gets hanging and we're going to take the skin off it, then we're going to go to the boning knife.
Right.
Or even to the skin and blade. You get to my knife collection, it's like looking at some people's, you know, hobby shop.
There's right.
A knife for every moment of every situation.
And that skinning blade, if I understand them, they tend to have a little more rounded point because what you're doing is you're going across the animal trying not to cut the meat off, but just separate the hide and the fat from the meat, right?
Correct.
Yep, and you want as much of that fat as you can to stay on the hide, so it needs to be sharp, but it's generally a taller and a thicker blade so that you can control it and see
it's real hardy, and you can actually even scrape with it.
Right, yeah, it's firm, very, yeah. Very strong steel, yeah.
But if you got a knife and it needs sharpening, you know, you gotta take the time to sharpen it.
Right.
I mean, maybe a half a football game.
Right.
3-4 beers. Get it in there and figure out that angle.
Right.
A lot of times I tell people that you're going to put your finger behind the back of the blade just to hold the same angle all the time.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be precisely 15 degrees or 22 degrees or anything like that. It has to be consistent.
Right.
Both sides all the time. And now you're going to get that nice, smooth cutting edge.
And you will see, if you're not doing this properly, you will see scratches on the, not where the sharpest part of the blade is, but up the blade a little bit. And that means that you're laying your knife too flat and you're not, the idea is to that same angle is you're drawing an edge on both sides to come to the infinite point. It goes right down to nothing, but you don't want that to be too thin because then it dulls quicker. So there is an angle that's perfect, and every knife comes from the factory with an edge on it, and pretty much you want to stay with that particular angle. And you can see when you're sharpening it what that should be, and you'll know because if you're sharpening and it takes 15 minutes to get any kind of a sharp edge that's tacky with your, and you know, I just touched the blade a little bit with your thumb, and if it's kind of tacky, you know you're getting there, right? And if it takes you that long and you still don't have that, you're using the wrong angle. I mean, from the practical sense.
And the other thing, a lot of people think steels are for sharpening.
Right.
They're not for sharpening, they're for maintaining.
Right.
And that's just a little fine hone, because if you looked at it under a microscope, there's like these little feathered edges on the edge of the knife that are the cutting
right
teeth, essentially, but they're microscopic, and that steel just straightens them out.
Yep.
So a real dull knife, a steel's not going to do you any good. But
right.
When you're working and you start to feel it get a little draggy,
right,
couple strokes on the steel, it just tunes that knife right back up. And if you do it often enough, you can avoid the big long sharpening session.
Right. It's like anything else that you have, any sporting a piece of equipment or anything you've got. You got to keep it maintained. Right. So coming up next, we use our sharp knife. We get some venison, and Chaz has a really good venison sausage recipe. Stick with us. We'll be back.